I'd like to thank the advisor for inviting me to speak here and organizing this conference. What I want to talk about today is the following group. If you take S to be a surface, which has non-empty boundary components, I want, I'll denote by M as boundary, the group of diffeomorphisms of the surface S, which preserves the orientation and the boundary, but pointwise, and I take the connected components of that group. So there are isotropy classes of diffeomorphism which preserve the boundary pointwise. So my goal is to study this group using fat graphs and I want to study the group, I want to study its cohomology, I want to study the way it stabilizes as well. Okay. So I just want to use combinatorics and a bit of algebraic topology and homotopy theory to try to get at this group. So the reason why we're interested in this group is its relation to the moduli space of Riemann surfaces. So this is the group that acts on a Teichmuller space to give us the moduli space. So if we understand this group, we'll understand the moduli space as well. Right, so my plan, which I should probably put on the same board, is first of all, to introduce what kind of fat graph I'm going to work with. So I'm going to introduce my model for BMS delta for the mapping class group of ordered surfaces. And once I introduce that model, I want to use it to build a CW structure. On that space, on BMS delta. And of course, the CW structure is going to give a cochain complex, which I'll talk about briefly. And the last two things, I might change my mind and do one of them. The third one is just a short note on chord diagram. I thought I should include it here because that's a bit how I got interested in that group and in fat graphs, is to define string operations, we use a certain type of fat graph. And there was a question about how the space of these chord diagrams, which is a special type of fat graph, fit with that group. And I have not a good result for it. I have a bad result about it. So I'll just mention that briefly. And the last thing I want to do is talk about how we could use the model to talk about the stabilization of the mapping class group. So please, if anything isn't clear, especially about the model, since you should all be able to see what I'm talking about pretty fast. So if anything is unclear, please ask questions. I don't like to talk by myself. No, you're speaking to me now. All right, so first of all, I'm going to define my model. So bordered fat graph. I'll recall the definition that Ralph gave yesterday about a fat graph. So a fat graph is, well, first of all, it's a graph. It's a combinatorial graph. But it has a bit more structure. So it has a cyclic ordering of the edges coming into each vertice. So of the edges, each adjacent to each vertex. So, for example, This is a graph. If you want to make this a fat graph, you need to give a cyclic ordering of the edges coming into U and of the edges coming into V. If we take the one induced by the counterclockwise orientation on the plane, what you get is, for U, you get A, B, C, and for V, you get A bar, B bar, C bar. And as Ralph said yesterday, you can thicken a fat graph and you get a surface. The way you do that is you replace each of the edges by a thin strip. And you glue these strips at the vertices following the cyclic ordering. So in this case, I replace A, this is C, and B by strips. And then at U, I take A comes B, after B comes C, after C comes A. And the same thing in V. All right, so you end up getting a surface. And one thing that's good to notice, because we're interested in boundaries, the boundaries of this surface actually corresponds to something combinatorially as well. You can follow the boundary here, and you'll get another cycle in the edges of that graph. So for example, if you start, actually have colored chalk. So if you start here by following A, the next one is going to be B bar. And then after B bar, after you follow B bar, you'll get C, A bar, B, C bar. So this surface has a single boundary component which corresponds to this cycle in the edges. And I'll call this a boundary cycle. Also, as Ralph mentioned, these fat graphs have been used by Strabo, by Harrer, by Penner to study the moduli space of punctured Riemann surfaces. So the definite space, which was a space of isometric classes of these graphs where they put metric on the edge, and by letting those metric move on a simplex, they built a space and proved that that space was homeomorphic to the moduli space of punctured Riemann surface. Okay. So I want to change this model a bit to be able to talk about boundaries, to talk about bordered surface. So to get a parametrization on the surfaces, all I need is to add one starting point for each boundary component. And you can think of that starting point as the image of one of the parametrization. So to do this, combinatorially, what I need is a notion of bordered fat graph. So a bordered fat graph is, first of all, a fat graph, but we also ask that fat graph has exactly one leaf for each boundary cycle. So when I say exactly one leaf, I mean exactly one univalent vertex. Univalent. And also, all other vertices should be at least trivalent. So that leaf would be that starting point that we were missing. If you take this graph here, it has three boundary components. It has the outer one, it has this one, and it has this one. So if we want to build a bordered fat graph out of this fat graph, we need to add three leaves, one for each of the boundary components. So if we have, we can add this one for the first boundary component, this one for the second, and this one for the third, for example, and this is a bordered fat graph. Are there any questions? Okay, so to get the model out of this, I do the following. So the first statement of the theorem is that there exists a category. Whose objects are isomorphism classes of these. So isomorphism classes of bordered fat graphs. Whose leaves are ordered. So if the leaves are ordered, it's the same thing as the boundary components are ordered. So you're not allowed to swish first and second boundary components. And the morphisms correspond to a forest of a graph, and the morphism will collapse that forest. So what you can say is that for each forest inside of a graph, you get a morphism from that bordered fat graph to that bordered fat graph where you collapse that forest, and that collapses exactly F. Exactly. You're not allowed to collapse leaves. It's disjoint from leaves. Because otherwise you wouldn't get a bordered fat graph as an image. Well, the leaf is the vertex at the end of that edge, right?
Oh,
so what I'm saying is this.
You're not getting that edge.
That vertices is disjoint from our forest, so this edge cannot be in our forest. So, for example, in that. Right. So in that, you can actually take this to be your forest, for example. So for F being this, what you get is you get a morphism phi F from this to this graph. All right, and the second statement of this theorem actually talks about the homotopy type of those categories. So if you realize this category, what you get is a disjoint union of a classifying space for the mapping class group where S is any surface but the disk. Okay. Any questions? Is there? Sure.
Or is you're saying this category, the definite category is kind of part of the theorem. Okay.
Yeah, you can
okay.
In general, it's not obvious to if you have, so there is a category over this one, which contains just non-isomorphism classes of fat graph, which is bordered fat graph, and the morphisms are actually maps of sets, which preserve the structure. And what this theorem actually says is that, well, since there are no automorphisms in that category, what you can do is you just take isomorphism classes instead of the objects themselves. And actually, that's an interesting point. The fact that you don't have these non-trivial automorphism is exactly the same statement as saying that the surfaces, the Riemann surface with boundaries, don't have symmetries, right? And that statement is the same thing as to say that in this case, this classifying space is the same thing as the moduli space of bordered Riemann surface. And this category actually realizes to space of metric graphs and metric fat graphs, and it's really similar to a model of Bob Penner once you realize it as metric fat graphs. So out of this model, we'll build a CW structure, and it's going to be the same idea that Michael talked to us about on Monday. We're just going to use the combinatorics of the graph to split this, to filter this space up. We need the concept of codimension. So the codimension of a bordered fat graph I'll define it this way, which is not too enlightening, but it's much simpler. You take all the vertices of your graph which are not Lie's, and you take their valence, so the number of edges coming into it, and you subtract 3. So there's a nicer way to think about this, and it's you take the graph that lies above your graph that has the most edges, so the fully extended one, and you count how many edges you had to add. So for example, if you take this bordered fat graph here, you have a single vertex which isn't a leaf, so the codimension is the number of edges at that vertex minus 3, so you get 5 minus 3, you get 2. But also, this 2 corresponds to, if you take the graph with the most edges that lie above this one, it would be something like that. To get to it, you need to collapse these 2 edges. And that's where the 2 comes from as well. Since our morphisms collapse for us, they actually increase the codimension. So any morphism increases the codimension, and only the identity morphism preserves codimension. So using the concept of codimension, you end up getting a filtration on your category. Where FP of fat would be the subcategory of fat B, whose objects have codimension at most P. So the zero level would contain only the graphs that are fully extended, and then you can collapse one at a time as you go up in the filtration. So a theorem says that actually this filtration, once you realize it, you get the skeleton of a CW structure. F0 fat, F1 fat, So this is a skeleton for a CW structure on fat B. And you can say something about the number of cells. Excuse me?
What you were calling the codimension becomes the
dimension. Right, the dimension of the cells that you have. Yeah, exactly.
The zero cells, the first seed of the trivalent graphs of the zero cells.
Right, so for each, which is what I'm going to say, for each isomorphism class of bordered fat graph of codimension P, you get a P cell. All right, so what am I saying? All right, it has a P cell for every codimension P bordered by graph. All right, before I give you a hint of how to prove this, I'll just do a short, a fast corollary. If you take that CW structure and you take the cellular cochain complex, well, you get a cochain complex for, well, these spaces, for the modulized space of bordered human surface, or for the cohomology of the bordered mapping class group, and it's going to give you the integral, because it's the integral cohomology, because it's just a CW structure. And that cochain complex is going to have one generator per isomorphism class of fat graph. So it's going to be the equivalent of the graph complex, of Concevich's graph complex, to this case, to the bordered case. And it actually works integrally in this case. And again, it works integrally because we don't have any isotropy on Teichmuller space. All right, so corollary. There is a cochain complex whose Peetz cochains are the free abelian group on the bordered fat graph of codimension exactly P, because those are the Peetz cell in our structure, which computes the cohomology of, I'll put the mapping class group. I just, as a note, I did some computations with this. I did actually one computation. So my first computation, I restricted myself to the case where you have genus 1 and a single boundary component. So the cohomology of this mapping class group gives you Z in dimensions 0 and 1, and 0 for higher codimensions. And as Dennis explained to me, this comes about because the trefoil knot, if you take the complement of the trefoil knot, you actually get a classifying space for this group as well. So you know it's a homology sphere. So the theorem of Quillen, which says that the complement of the trefoil knot is a B of the braid group on three strands. But it turned out that the mapping class group of this surface is generated by two Dane twists, one around A and one around B. And there's a unique relation that says the Dane twist around ABA is BAB. All right. So this result was actually known. So it's not that exciting, but it's still a cool theorem. So the other computations I've tried.
In theorem six, what is the how many
that's
skeletons you have?
It's theorem G.
G. Oh, yeah. what's the dimension? How many skeletons are existing there?
All right,
For this example.
Oh, for this example, you get four objects. You get codimension 0. You have this one. For codimension 1, you get this one and this one. And then for codimension, no, it's the opposite. This is codimension 2, this is codimension 1. And for codimension 0, you get this one. So you have only four objects in this case, which makes the computation really easy and really fast. It's a 2 complex with 1, 0, 2, 1, and 1, 2, yeah. So if you look at what the chain complex would be for higher genus, I've actually built it for genus 2 and almost built it for genus 3. It blows up really, really fast. For genus 2, you end up getting about, I'd say, 20,000 objects. And for genus 3, I'm up to 1 million and I'm not done. Not by hand, by computer. But I was trying by hand at first for genus 2 because that was so easy. I thought, oh, sure. Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, that you could do.
What?
Like, putting more holes would be torus minus 2 disks?
Yeah.
All right. I'll try it. Well, I mean, this is not even a manifold if you just realize it. It's a spline. Okay. I haven't thought of it that way. You can actually, I mean, if you thicken this, you do get something homeomorphic to the moduli space. So the question would just be, can you do it on the moduli space? And I'm sure other people here would have the answer to that. Anything else? Okay. So why don't I give an idea of the theorem, how you can see. All right, so if you want to go from the P minus 1 filtration to the P filtration, what you add is you add all the objects that have codimension exactly P. So if you look at, if you take gamma to be, to have codimension P, and now you want to look at how adding it to the category changes the category. So what you can say is that if you consider this category, so the objects that lie above it, well, you have graphs that have more vertices than gamma. So how can you build a graph with more vertices than gamma? Well, you take a vertex of gamma and you replace it by a tree. So really what this is just a product of categories. Well, you have one category per vertex in gamma, so V, a vertex of gamma. And then for each of those, you look at a space of trees. So here what you have is a category of isomorphism classes. So you have trees, but since you have fat graph, you have planar trees. And you know how many leaves those planar trees are supposed to have, because they're supposed to sit where V was. So they need to have the same number of leaves that V had, in a way. So it's width valence of EV leaves. It turns out that if you realize this, you get a space of metric trees of the same type. And that's already known to be homeomorphic to Stashev associahedron. So its homeomorphism type is already known and is just
even combinatorially equivalent, right?
Right. So the way Stashev built it is, he looks at, well, that's the one I've read anyways, he looks at this sequence, and for each way of putting a parenthesis, he has a cell, right? So that parenthesis would correspond to kind of cutting along one of the edges and looking at the leaves that are on one side and the leaves that are on the other side. Right, so it's that space, pretty much, if you realize it. Is just homeomorphic to I to the number of leaves minus 3. So that's where the valence of V minus 3 comes from. And if you take the entire thing, you get that actually, this reasoning works both for the punctured case and for the bordered case. The only difference is here, you don't have any automorphisms of this. So when you're adding this into the category, you're not mudding out the sphere by the group of automorphisms. And in the case of punctures, that mudding out is what makes the results only rational, because you have a sphere, you're mudding it out by a finite group. So rationally, you can say what the cohomology is, but integrally it's not obvious. You have to work more. But in this case, since that group is just the identity, I mean, you need to work just a bit more, but it's not interesting, so it comes down to that statement. Any questions about this before I move on to a different topic? If anybody knows of a good way of plugging a chain complex into a computer and getting cohomology back, I'd like to hear about it. Like, I know genus 3, I don't think it's going to be possible, but genus 2 is not that big. And I don't mind letting my computer run for a long time. I think it's doable. Excuse me? Sure. So if you look at the cochain complex, so if you take one of the generator, which is an isomorphism type of bordered sprite graph, its boundary is only equal to, you take all the edges in gamma and you collapse them. So it's exactly like conservative graph complex. And of course, if E is a cycle, you can't really collapse it. So you only take the ones you can collapse. And there's a sign issue that corresponds to the orientation of the cell and the orientation of the boundary. Okay?
It's the
quickly.
All right. There are different combinatorial ways of seeing the orientation. There is one where you, if you put an orientation on all of the edges, and if you order the vertices, you get a natural orientation of the entire cell. And then you can talk about what orientation that cell would induce on all of its boundary. So there's a way of getting from that kind of... Yeah, and you mod out by the obvious isomorphism, obvious equivalence relation. Yeah, and there's a way of talking about the induced orientation that way. But there's tons and tons of different ways. All you need to be able to do is to orient the full simplices in a natural way. So if you, the cell at gamma actually corresponds to all all p simplices that start at gamma and add one edge at a time. So as long as you can give an orientation on all of these simplices that are compatible, which means that cancel on the right faces, on their common faces, then it's fine. So there are tons and tons of different ways. I know that Kinsevich had one. The one I told you was due to Conant and Volkmann. And I'm sure there's... So the following section, I'm just putting in because this conference is supposed to be about loop spaces, and I thought I should say it at least once out loud. So when... this is section 3, I think. So core diagrams are a special type of fat graphs, and they've been used to define string operations. So let me define them. So a core diagram is a bordered fat graph. Let's call it gamma. But there's some more data. You have a splitting of the boundary components. Of the boundary cycle into two different boundary cycle sets, I guess. So you have the incoming boundary cycle and you have the outgoing boundary cycle. And that really corresponds to a splitting of the surface, of the boundary of the surface, into incoming boundaries and outgoing boundaries. You're only saying which boundaries are incoming, which boundaries are outgoing. But for the construction of the string operations to work, you needed a technical condition that was each edge that doesn't touch the vertices. Not the vertices, the leaf. So for each edge that doesn't touch the leaf, you want A appears once in the incoming and once in the outgoing. So that's really a technical condition that came about when you wanted to build a tubular neighborhood for the embedding that looked like this. Map of gamma into M into loop space. to the P. Okay? For those people who know, that's... Can you see? Yeah. So for this embedding of infinite dimensional space, for it to have a nice tubular neighborhood, you needed this strange condition. And by the way, this is not the original definition of core diagram, which is due to Dennis. The original one talked about the incoming boundary component being circles, and then you had cores attached to them. Turns out that the two are homotopy equivalent, and I just like to work for that with that one because it's simpler to define. Well, in a talk, anyways. All right. So, for example, if you—that's not what I want to do. If you look at this graph, you have two boundary components. You need two leaves. So, if this is A, C, B, D, then the boundary components are A, C, D, B, and two leaves, 1, 1, and then A, C, D bar, B, and two leaves. So the point is that in this case, there is a way of splitting this boundary cycle. If you take this to be the incoming, and this to be the outgoing. A appears once here, same for B, same for C, same for D. Okay. So you get a subcategory, CD of fat B. So we know what fat B is. We know what fat B realizes to, but we don't know what CD realizes to. And CD... it would be interesting to know what CD realizes to because we actually get, so the full statement of, I guess, I'm not sure who to give this to, but what you actually get is that the string operations are parameterized by the homology of this space. So you get and there was a conjecture that actually this inclusion was a homotopy equivalence on the realization. So all I want to say today is that that's false, and this cannot be the... Well, I'll write it down, but... This cannot be the moduli space of bordered surfaces. So it's not a good result. It's just something I should say. All right, so first, to get to that... You just look at the dimension of this space. So the dimension of the category restricted to the ones that model surfaces of genus G with P incoming and Q outgoing is 2G plus P plus Q minus 3. Okay. So this is just the consequences of one fact. That if you look at a vertex of a core diagram and you wonder how many edges can be at that vertex, you get some surprise. So if you have a vertex, and if you have a bunch of edges leaving it, well, if this edge here, all these edges are all leaves. So if this edge is in an incoming boundary component, then so is this one, right? So if you go that way, it's an incoming, so that one would be an incoming as well. So you know that this one's an outgoing, right? So this one's an outgoing. So this one's an incoming, so this one's an outgoing. So at a vertex, you need an even number of edges coming into it, which seems trivial, it seems silly, but this means that the valence at a vertex, most vertices, is going to be at least 4. So that actually restricts the size of the graph you can have. And that restriction is exactly what is going to give you this bound. So this means that most vertices are at least, you can't say like quadrivalent or tetravalent or something like that, have at least valence 4, which means that the number of vertices is less than or equal to 2g plus p plus q minus 4, and go on from there. Right, so why is this killing the conjecture that this space is the moduli space of bordered surfaces? Well, there's a theorem of Harrer that actually gives us a cohomological dimension of the moduli space, and it says that the cohomological dimension of if you take a surface with genus G and N boundary components, the cohomological dimension of this group is for G plus 2 P plus Q minus 4, and that's if G is bigger or equal to 1. 2N, sorry. All right, so just by comparing this cohomological dimension with the dimension of our space, we know our space cannot give us a classifying space for the mapping class group.
What's the dimension of yourself?
It's almost the same. I get 4g plus 3n minus 5. So in the case where n is equal to 1, you get the same, the right cohomological, you have the dimension and the cohomological dimension are equal. And actually, Harrer's paper didn't the complex he built is of the same dimension as mine. It's just that he manages to build a duality of that dimension. You always have one of them. Well, in that case, otherwise the space is empty, right? I mean, in the case of core diagrams, if you don't have an incoming boundary component, then it means that each edge must appear only once in the cycles, but that's impossible. If you have only one type of boundary, you don't have any core diagrams. Because, all right, so what you're saying is if you stop here, this definition would give you the same thing if you don't have an outgoing, right? But the problem is you have this extra condition, which actually tells you that that an edge cannot appear twice in an incoming, but each edge appears twice in the total boundary cycle. So if it can't appear twice, it means that you don't have such a splitting. So the condition is exactly the reason why, if you look at, so I'll do it on an example because it's always easier to understand it that way. But if you look at, so I said that this was a core diagram. If you look at the map of this into M, well, you can restrict yourself to the map of this into M, right? So you get a loop. And you want to study this embedding. If you look at when a loop came from such a map, you only need to check if it agrees at this point and this point and this point and this point. And the reason for that is exactly the fact that the incoming doesn't have both sides of one edge. Otherwise, you'd have Otherwise, you'd have an entire edge to check. So that finiteness intersection between the incoming and the outgoing boundary components is exactly this. Okay, so because of that, what you can do is you can evaluate this at these four points, and you get M4. And here you only need to evaluate at the two points, you get M2. You get the twice the diagonal. And this is a pullback diagram, exactly because the loops that come from here are exactly the ones that agree at these points. So you can take the tubular neighborhood here, you can pull it upstairs, and now you have a nice tubular neighborhood to your embedding. So it's really, if you have this construction in mind, that's the definition you want. But the problem is that that definition doesn't give you the right space. So it's still unclear what that space is, but yeah.
But you're only trying to embed one side there.
Yes, but you want the other one to be an embedding, don't you? Oh, you want this to be an embedding.
But the other one just want to push forward. It's a bit relaxed condition, so it appears one thing.
So it has to be an embedding. It has to be an injection.
That way.
Yeah.
But then you will get up.
So there are two conditions. It has to be an injection, and it has to be finite codimension. So if I have something like this here, okay, and if I restrict to these two, then I have LM cross LM. You're right that I don't have like an intersection between my two loops that are an entire interval. But the problem is, for two loops here, I have tons of choices here. I have a path. So there are two different conditions that are kind of dual to each other. So you can't relax one side and.
Yeah. I think it's clear if you draw the outer circle at the end.
Okay, so this is the case where you have. So this is the case where you have an edge appearing twice in the outgoing. So when you restrict to the incoming, you have two different. But if you do the opposite, if you think of this one as the incoming, then to know if a loop here came from something here, what you need to do is you need to make sure they agree on this edge and that edge. So what you end up with, right, and the reason why we like this diagram is the fact that the bottom line was an embedding of finite dimensional manifold. Here, we're back with infinite dimensional, so it doesn't help us. Okay, so that's where this condition, which seems strange when you first see it, comes from. Okay, I didn't write the end. So the corollary to Harrer's theorem, which used to be there a while ago, is that the space of Korr diagram is not homotopy equivalent to. Not only that, and none of the components, because that's a weaker statement. So if you restrict to a component, yeah, thank you. And that's an interesting thing, is that if G is equal to zero, then that's actually true. This is homotopy equivalent to. And this was known. This has been known for a bit. And the way you prove this is you think of these Korr diagrams of genus 0 and you relate them to the little disk operad. So that is why we thought that in higher genus it would work as well. All right, just since I have a couple minutes, I won't have time to do this well, but I still want to do it. So I'll talk a lot and write little. I wanted to talk about stabilizing this. Stabilizing. So, if you take a surface of genus G with one bounding component, you can actually glue a tori, a torus, here. Okay. And that induces a map from this mapping class group to the mapping class group with more genus. And it's again a theorem of Haarer and actually Ivanov made the bounds better that this is a homology isomorphism or cohomology, let's write it. For star less than G over 2. So then there were a lot of questions about what that stable cohomology was. And there was a conjecture of Mumford which said that the stable cohomology, at least rationally, was just a polynomial on the kappa class. And if you let, I'll just, this be the limit of all these MG1s, well, there was a theorem, recent theorem, of Mattson and Weiss, Mattson and Weiss, that says that if you group complete the classifying space of this, they identify this to be the infinite loop space on CP infinity minus 1. And actually, that gave as a corollary the Mumford conjecture. Which says that the cohomology of M infinity is a polynomial in the kappa classes. So those kappa classes correspond to surface bundles, so the classifying spaces. So there's one construction that came into this proof, and that's called a Bordism category, and is due to Tillman. So this is the construction that gave gave the proof that this space was actually an infinite loop space. And that was the first step in trying to figure out what it could be. And you have so many infinite loop spaces. And she actually built, with Mattson, the map to loops infinity, CP infinity minus 1. So the Bordism category is objects, just the natural numbers with 0. So you want to think of them as a certain number of circles. So you have n corresponds to n circles. And the morphism is, again, a category whose objects are surfaces. So a morphism between N and M, you'd have a surface with N incoming and M outgoing. So that would be an object of these morphisms. And a morphism would be this of between. Right, I'm being vague because I don't have time at all. But this is a construction, and by using the fact that this is a symmetric monoidal, a strict symmetric monoidal category, you get that this is the realization is an infinite loop space, and then she identified this relation with the loops on this with Z cross BM plus infinity. So I've been thinking about how to build this category out of fat graph. So you can define C fat, whose objects are natural number plus zero. And then the morphism, you want a category that looks something like this. Well, instead of surfaces, why not fat graph? Right? So why not take the category fat B as morphism? The only problem with this is you need to be able to compose morphisms. And that's actually the touchy part, is how do you compose graphs? So in the surface case, all you need to do is glue along the bounding component, and that gives you a new surface with the right number of incoming and the right number of outgoing. So how do you do that with fat graphs? How do you glue them along the boundary? Well, I've been thinking about this for a while, and I decided recently that I was thinking wrong. Is that you don't want to do this with fat graphs. And actually, Kaufman, Livernais, and Penner have a way of doing this, but their way, you need to complete, and I don't want to complete. So you need to complete this category to include, to be able to get rid of edges. And the reason why you get rid of edges is that sometimes they don't hit each other well. What I mean by this is if you have A and A bar coming later, so if this is one of the boundary components, and if you have another one that you want to glue to, so this is omega is A and then A bar comes later, and then here you'd have E and E bar. If you have E here and E bar here, the problem you'll encounter in just, like the logical thing would be kind of to see where they meet and subdivide them, then you get a bunch of smaller edges, and that's exactly what you do. But here, if you look at where this hits, well, you get a vertex, right? And that vertex is here as well, because this is the same edge. And then this would hit somewhere here, so you have a vertex here. Okay? And so what they do with that problem is that they just get rid of the common part. They don't do it with graphs, they do it with the arc complex, but they get rid of an arc that's a loop. And that corresponds to this problem. So my way of dealing with it is, since I'm only interested in something that's stable, I don't care if this is the gluing or something else is the gluing, I want something that's homology equivalent, at least stably. So what I'll do is, instead of gluing this way, I'll do something that seems completely wrong, but I'll add so I'll have something like this. So if you're interested in getting something like an operat that represents the geometry behind, this is horrible. But using Hauer's stability theorem, up to in the range of dimension, this is the same thing as gluing just cylindrical things at the bounding component. But this is really easy to do with the graph. You just take all the leaves, put them in a common vertex, and add a leaf there. Not only that, but there's a way of making it associative on the nose by collapsing the leaf that corresponds to this and this boundary component. If you collapse these, you'll get you actually get a functor from fat cross fat into fat, which is associative on the nose. You don't need to tweak, you don't need to do anything else. Okay. And I don't think you get a strict symmetric monoidal category. But what you do get, I think Tillman's proof that this, the loop over this, realizes to B gamma infinity plus cross Z, just uses higher stability in the that generalized group completion theorem. And frankly, I haven't done the details yet, but it seems to me at first that it would go through just because higher stability doesn't see the difference between this and the other gluing. So you get a model, a combinatorial model for Well, depending on what you're interested in, either this one or I use M. I'm sorry, I went on a slug.